around the campfires. My guest during the second half hour of tonight's program is Dr. Joel Brown, who is director of the Center for... Help me out here, Joel. Are you with us?
Sure. Center for Educational Research and Development in Berkeley.
Exactly. Thank you very much. And also the author of a new book called Resilience Education, and we're going to tell our listeners where they can order that book. Joel, one of the reasons I've asked you to be with us this evening is because there is some discussion here in the community about the wisdom of our local school district continuing to use their program as a means of educating students and encouraging them not to engage in the use of harmful substances. And you are a nationally recognized expert on that topic and have written extensively about it. Can you tell us in a nutshell, I guess, what your opinions are of the DARE program and whether you think there might be some alternatives that are more effective?
Sure. Well, first of all, thanks for inviting me onto the show. I'm happy to be here. In a nutshell, if we are asking whether or not it's good for young people to bond with police officers and others in the school, undoubtedly that's a good thing. But whether or not DARE actually prevents kids from using drugs, I think the science is almost unquestionable at this time, that there remains not one single scientifically sound long-term study that shows that DARE prevents young people from using drugs.
That's a pretty sweeping statement. Can you tell us what some of the studies are that support that view?
Well, there are numerous studies. Ours is probably one of the largest in the United States that looked at numerous drug education programs, including DARE. And we found in the middle 90s, and that research has been repeated, that not only does it not educate kids effectively regarding the drug decisions they're all going to have to make, but it also, in many cases, causes a series of negative effects that were also found in other studies.
What are some of those negative effects?
The negative effects are mostly confined to the very serious issue of an emotional trauma, if you will, resulting from the any drug use equals drug abuse type of notion that is promoted in, I should say, not just DARE, but almost all major programs in the United States. And the result is that when kids are told inside school that all drugs are bad in any measure or its variations, that and outside of school they see a variety of people using a variety of substances with different effects, that causes an emotional contradiction in young people that we now know by fifth grade has a very significant emotional impact. And by the way, in one study that was funded by the law enforcement community itself, one long-term study of DARE, it was found that the kids in the suburbs that had DARE had significantly higher drug use than the kids that did not have any DARE at all.
What do you attribute that to?
Well, it's unclear because there is a real issue that emerges in the scientific community, which is quite often when we find negative effects in research, it's not necessarily replicated because it's not sexy or glamorous to report no effects or negative effects. So we aren't able to follow that up, but at this point in time, but our research, as well as numerous other studies, have shown not only ineffectiveness, but a constellation of negative effects that are emerging from drug education. And it should be quite serious to any parent who has children who are being educated about drugs, as well as the drug issue in the larger context of our society.
Do those negative effects include a diminution in self-esteem?
That's an interesting question. I would say probably the issue of diminution of self-esteem is a component of the larger issue of whether or not these programs are effective. And when I say component, I mean this, that not only do we have drug education programs in schools, but we also have policies related to drug education in school, and they're called zero tolerance policies. And And I think our organization is one of the only organizations, nonprofits, in the United States that's doing, you know, ongoing research as to the implications of these zero-tolerance policies on young people in our society. And so I think what we see is, when we look at that evidence, is that the strongest issue related to self-esteem is young people who stay in school watching their friends who they may think has a drug problem removed from school, and that in turn we think, I underscore, results in a circumstance where the young people get the message that adults don't care about them, which ultimately I would think results in their reduction of self-esteem resulting from these programs. Another component of self-esteem might be that kids don't have adequate information to make the very tough drug decisions that they will inevitably have to make, so their self-esteem somewhat suffers.
It does seem to me that the educational information that I've seen that's published by the DARE program is far from objective, and in fact tends to, I suspect, reinforce the impression that many students have gotten from so-called drug education programs in the past, that if they're lying about the negative effects of marijuana, for instance, that they're probably also exaggerating the negative effects of truly more dangerous drugs, heroin, PCP, methamphetamine, whatever. Do you agree? Do you see that phenomenon?
I think you're raising a very important point here. When we compared the nature of drug information in these programs, not just DARE, but a wide range of programs, we saw that there was a considerable, you might call, stretching of the truth. And so when young people recognize this, and we found in our research, for example, that by about sixth or seventh grade, young people quite often came to believe that they were not being told the truth. And that they come to, by eighth or ninth grade, they come to fully reject the messages as well as the messengers. And so there is a real serious issue about the validity of drug information that is provided to young people in the schools.
We had a recent extensive article in last Sunday's newspaper here in town about drug education efforts in one of the local high schools. And when pressed by the reporter, some of the people who supervise those programs acknowledged that they are knowingly, intentionally putting out false information, which is, I guess, intended now to understate the actual prevalence of legal and illegal drug use by young people. I know that a few years ago it seemed that the strategy of the those who are promoting DARE and similar programs was that the numbers are so fantastically high that we all need to be up in arms and do something about it. And now they fear that the impression given to students that everyone's doing it has actually had the opposite effect of what they intended and has encouraged greater usage. So now they are erring on, they're still lying, but they're lying by understating the actual prevalence of drug use. Have you seen that philosophy coming into prominence?
Well, really, if you look at drug education and take a longer-term perspective, as many of us scientists tend to do, these kinds of things move in somewhat cycles. But one thing that remains relatively consistent is that although we're in what you might call a spike in drug use today, on average, over the last 25, 30 years, kids' drug use, almost by the time they graduate high school, roughly 80% of kids will have experimented with alcohol, tobacco, or other drugs. So we do see somewhat variations in the classrooms of what is actually taught, but in the last 15 or 20 years, those variations have been within a relatively narrow range. There's a lot of different names of programs out there, but what is really important for listeners to understand from a scientific perspective is that when we look under the names of the programs and look at the elements in them, they are bound by one unchanging policy mandate. That is the policy mandate, Section 4132 of the Drug-Free Schools and Communities Act, that mandates teaching of no-use drug education, that you cannot get funding for a program unless it actually teaches in practice that all substances are bad, that all drugs are harmful, and preaches what's called a no-use message. Now, by the way, because I'm saying that from a research perspective, does not in any way mean that I am condoning kids using drugs. It's been so long that since America has had a real discussion about these issues, about what is going on at Ground Zero in the classrooms, that it could be easily misinterpreted as me being a drug legalizer. The point is that we haven't had a discussion about what goes on in these classrooms in a very long time.
And I think what you're trying to do is acknowledge the reality, the truth, the simple fact that young people do experiment with alcohol and with other drugs.
Well, I think you're bringing up, again, another very important point. If we want to begin working with kids, we need to, number one, reestablish our credibility. And the reality is that most of them will experiment, as I said before. But another part of the reality is that if we teach them just say no, and most of them go and experiment anyway, then what do we do? Then what are we left with? And in 1991, the U.S. General Accounting Office said in a report to the federal government that if we don't fund research on promising alternative programs, then the search for promising programs would have to, quote-unquote, begin again. And unfortunately, the federal government has not heeded the General Accounting Office's advice. And in the last, few years, there have been at least 10 examinations of drug education showing ineffectiveness, and at least two or three more showing, harm done to kids by these programs.
Including the DARE program.
That's right.
Let me mention to our listeners that my name is Dan Beetz. This is KOPN 89.5 FM, and my guest this evening is Dr. Joel H. Brown, director of the Center for Educational Research and Development and author of the newly published book, Resilience Education. Joel, do you want to tell us a little bit about that book before we go further on the DARE program?
Sure, I'd be happy to. It's really important that, as I said before, when the GAO recommended we examine a variety of alternative programs, that we actually really do. But there's little governmental support for this, and so there are a very significant emerging cadre of researchers who have looked beyond the current variations on Just Say No and its themes. And our organization is a nonprofit that has tried to look beyond and say, what will the next generation of drug education, or education actually, look like? And what we now know is that when you focus on young people's capacities, innate capacities to thrive, it actually produces an adult that is highly functional, that not only survives but thrives. And that is the topic of our book called Resilience Education.
And it's about the type of drug education that actually works, that actually produces positive results.
It's a general approach to education and to working with kids. And a lot of people made fun of it in the 1970s, that these are touchy-feely, programs that build on self-esteem. And the evidence wasn't there to back it up. But now we have a couple studies that are over 40 years long that follow young people from birth to 40, and has shown repeatedly now that the components of not just surviving but thriving are having caring adults present, having high expectations for young people, and having opportunities to participate and to contribute to the society. And these are really some of the specifics that we grapple with for any parent, educator, or helping professional to work with when they're working with kids. That's what resilience education is all about, educating in a way, in a basic approach that treats children as if they can become, and in many cases, as if they are, competent individuals that can grow and learn and thrive when they are connected with adults.
Well, that sounds like essentially very good news, I think, and very positive news. Your book's published by Corwin Press Sage Publications, and it's available by calling 805-499-9774. Try to get that number out again later.
Okay.
Listeners want to get that number, 805-499-9774. Joel, getting back to the DARE program for just a minute, my own bias in this debate about the wisdom of continuing the DARE program in our schools is that it seems to me it's fundamentally an error to begin with the presumption that police are the best people to teach drug education. It seems to me that professional educators who are actually hold degrees in the field of education might be the best people to teach most topics, including drug education, and that we ought to let the police do their work and send them out to investigate crime. You believe that's a valid observation?
I don't disrespect your observation, but I want to offer a piece of information that might give you a little more context. We have a scientific paper that's coming out next month that absolutely stunned us. It's taken about 3.5 years of research to do. And what we found was, when we looked across the schools and communities, we found that although nearly all drug education takes place in schools, there is virtually no educational participation in the development of drug education programs. So what we see is, and this is with no offense whatsoever intended towards DARE, but what we see repeatedly when we go into schools is we see, especially schools moving towards school reform. When we go into those schools, we find that the educators and all the administrators and the whole school community is working towards turning the school into an effective, healthy, democratic learning community. And then we come to drug education, where it's a complete break from what we know about effective education. And what we find is that although these programs take up a very small part of any given day, they have a disproportionately large effect on young people. So young people use these programs as tests as to whether or not adults are credible. So not only are these programs questionably effective in and of themselves, they have ramifications that go far beyond what we see in the educational community. They have ramifications about effective education. They have ramifications for the larger community. And so I guess I'm echoing what you're saying, but it is little known that there is so little educational involvement in terms of effective educational process in drug education. And what we're trying to look at is what would happen if we brought effective means of education back into drug education.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems to me that it's almost an affront to professional educators, to people who spend a good deal of their lives becoming prepared to be professional educators, to think that you can put a cop through a two-week alleged intensive training course and turn him into an effective teacher, him or her. It just seems to me that that's the fundamental problem with the DARE program, is that it is taught by police officers and not by professional educators.
Yeah, I think that you raise some very serious points that we need to address. And as a scientist, I look at it from kind of a slightly different perspective, but we have, you know, when we talk with educators, when we talk with people, administrators in the schools, the infrastructure of DARE is so substantial, and the funding is so substantial that, you know, really many people in the educational community just don't want to get in the way or have anything to do with it.
No, they don't seem to. It's almost a sacred cow. No one wants to question the wisdom of continuing this program despite the repeated, almost annually, a rehash of the fact that this program in particular, and many others, I'm sure, as well, of a similar nature, don't work and actually have negative effects. It's incredible. But I don't know if you call that cognitive dissonance, but some kind of, you know, denial ain't just a river in Egypt. I mean, the school administrators, I think, too.
Well, it is a very symbolically powerful motif to promote the no-use message. But now we have, when, you know, very few people in the last 15 or 20 years since the advent of Just Say No have really questioned the credibility or the wisdom of what we're actually getting when we just say no. Because what we're really getting is, you know, a much more, from a research perspective, a much more significant threat to young people's and the society's health and safety as a result of young people who are uninformed about basic drug issues. And those drug issues not only go to issues of drinking and driving, but they go to prescription drugs. And a young person evolving into an adult who does not know how to weigh drug information in order to make good decisions. So there's a whole undiscussed undercurrent in this field that really has very serious implications for the society at large.
It struck me for a long time that there are certainly parallels between drug education and sex education, aside from them both being highly charged, political sensitive issues, that the real tension, I think, is between those who want to acknowledge the reality that young people will experiment with sex and with drugs, that the most effective way to reduce the harm from that experimentation is to educate people as to how to have sex or use certain drugs without exacerbating the harm they may cause. On the other side, those who advocate that abstinence is the only way and the only doctrine that should be taught, and that's obviously the dominant paradigm right now.
Right, but let me share with you one thing. Where sex education has made inroads in the last 15 years in the educational environment, and resulting in, you know, a tremendous decrease in unwanted pregnancies and consequent abortions or other related issues, drug education has really made no inroads in these areas, and the discussion has been largely confined to a very, very narrow margin within just say no, and we can be tough and we can be tougher. And that has really cost us, and we are only beginning to see the true impact of the challenges in these programs. Despite repeated offerings that these programs are effective, the evidence, careful scrutiny of the evidence, tells us that we have some really significant problems that go far beyond drug education.
Well, I hope that at least there is hope for the future, and perhaps the success of bringing rationality to sex education will eventually impact the area of drug education as well. Joel, we're almost out of time this evening. I want to thank you again very much for being with me. Listeners, my guest this evening has been Dr. Joel H. Brown, director of the Center for Education Research and Development and the author of the book Resilience Education. Again, that's available from Corwin Press and Sage Publications at 805-499-9774. Thank you very much, Joel.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Have a good evening.
You too. Bye-bye.
Folks, I want to spend...